Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Y'all get the guns, the drugs, for my generation, I'll take the fall. The state, and across the nation, and it's a state. The guns, the fake, the fraud, they're messing with me. Come on.
Tony Acero, Harry Broders, and Rick Bay.
Aw, Puddin.
Well, hello.
Hello.
Hi, Andrew. How are you?
Not too bad. How about you, Tony?
Good. Welcome, everyone, to The Raw Reaction, the February 26th edition of The Raw Reaction, to be more precise. Harry is out with anal fissures. We wish him a speedy recovery and hope that, you know, it's not too much of a pain in the ass.
Oh, I see where you're going with that. I thought it was just the Office reference, and then you went there. Nice, nice.
It was both, actually. Thank you for that.
Nice combination. I like it.
I was going to go with rectal bleeding, but you know how much I hate Cole.
This is a very good point.
Yeah, so Harry's gone, and don't worry, he's just fine. He's spending some quality time with people that he cares about, aside from us. Before we get started, I want to say happy belated birthday to Andrew. You turned 21, correct?
Yeah, that's it. That was my first time drinking this weekend ever, yes.
What was your drink of choice? What is your drink of choice?
Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey.
Nice. Just straight up or on the rocks?
Oh, straight. You don't put rocks in to dilute that. Come on, that ruins it.
Yeah, some people do. You'd be surprised what people put in their drinks. I no longer am.
You no longer are somebody that puts rocks in your drinks or no longer a drinker? What was that exactly?
I'm no longer someone that is surprised with what people put in their drinks.
Ah, you went for secret option C. I like that one, yes.
So we have Raw to review, but before we get there, I just wanted to talk to you about the pay-per-view last night. I assume you watched, since you and I watch lots of wrestling.
Yes, 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 we do, and yes, I did.
Yeah. Well, rather than go match by match, I'm just going to basically cover the first match, the last match, and then you could pick something you want to talk about. How'd you feel about the ladies opening up and what they did with the layout of the match?
Honestly, I thought it was the best match of the night and a decent bit better than the men, so it was a very good match.
Yeah, I totally agree. I had to leave work really late. It was we have brunch on Sundays, and after that, it's a regular shift, but people stay after the brunch and drink. With no real sports on, it's kind of a, you know, free-for-all as far as who stays and who goes, and it just happened to be really busy. So when I left, the pay-per-view had already started. I put the network on my phone and watched it while driving home, probably about as safe as the match itself. But I was pleasantly surprised with a majority of what I saw. I was able to catch the tail end at home on the couch. It was great. It was way better than I expected. Not that I expected horrendousness, but it was way better than I expected. And I do agree that it was the best match on the card. What about the men's? I mean, were you as disappointed as everyone else who seemingly, you know, on Twitter and the world was?
See, I wasn't disappointed for the fact that Roman won, because I've kind of been a fan of Roman's since almost day one, not quite as long as the wonderful Mr. DeMarco for Chairshot. I have no issue with Roman at all. Granted, yes, it probably would have been a little better of a story if Braun didn't completely dominate the match and then somehow put himself in a bad position and go through a pod and then lose to Roman just spamming signatures like 3 or 4 times. I guess the layout could have been better, but as a match, it disappointed me purely because, and I think it's probably why I thought the women's was so much better, there was so many times where they just jawed at each other or they stopped, literally, and just watched the other person who got eliminated roll out of the ring. Like, there was no movement, there was no anything. They're just like, let's wait for this guy to leave. That gives us a nice 20-second breather, and then let's go back to starting a move or something like that. It's like, the action was so just stilted and awkward, and they just went for big spots here or there, like something cool, like everybody hitting their finisher on Braun just to kind of make a moment. But it was fairly terrible when it comes down to pacing and consistency in a match.
Yeah, I felt like there was a lot of stop-start moments. I never enjoyed the idea of someone stopping a match to watch someone be eliminated, whether it be the Royal Rumble or Elimination Chamber or anything like that. Another thing, the brutality of the chamber has been so, I want to say, watered down over the past few years. You know, whereas before, this was something where it was like, oh, shit, this is going to get crazy. And now you got padding on the outside. The plexiglass is hardly glass. I'm not saying I want these guys to be bloodied and beaten at the end of the night, but it does kind of take away from the mystique of the match itself. So that was a little bit bothersome. And as far as Reigns winning, look, I you're going to hear me say this a lot in the coming weeks. I've said this before. WrestleMania is all encompassing. So if you didn't want to see Reigns win this, then you're only upsetting yourself. Because it was going to happen. Everyone knew it was going to happen. You can't get mad at it. And if you do get mad at it, I think you're just one of those fans that need to take a seat, breathe in a little bit, and just understand that on the same card, you have AJ Styles versus Shinsuke Nakamura. So calm down. All right? So him winning didn't bother me nearly. It bothered me. But only because I'm not a big fan of Reigns. The wrestler is great. The character is horrible. I did not like the way that he won, especially with Braun just dominating and, you know, basically eliminating everyone and then getting eliminated himself in such a simple fashion. But I wasn't disappointed. I wasn't sad about it. I didn't throw my hands in the air. And to be honest with you, after tonight, I felt a little bit better. And we'll talk about that in a minute. Did anything else about the pay-per-view strike you as good and or bad worth talking about?
The only other talking point I have on it would be the – now, we like to say that Raw and SmackDown have this copycat mentality going from Riot Squad to Absolution where it's like, you know, that you can copy my answers but don't make it look too close to the exact. And Elimination Chamber committed this cardinal sin, like – 40 minutes between itself. Like, first you had the Asuka Nia Jax match, which it was an all right match, and Asuka barely wins with some kind of rolling Hurricane Rana kind of thing, gets a cheap roll up win, and she looks exhausted, but Nia Jax is apparently fine, even though you have your undefeated, you know, unpinned, you know, Japanese buzzsaw who's now the number one contender cleanly, and she's like killing everybody for the last 2 years, but somehow she was taken to her limit and Nia Jax just, even though she lost, runs her over literally, no sells any kind of strike, then puts her through a barricade, and we see the same thing almost exactly, except instead of a barricade, Roman goes through a pod, because Roman wins, Braun gets back up, looks a lot fresher than Roman was, and beats the crap out of him and throws him through a pod and leaves him in a heap. So it's one thing to kind of get the monster over even in a loss, and it's another thing to just pick the most generic, basic storytelling path and just beat it in the ground twice in two different matches and try to make it seem like people wouldn't notice. Like, that's just that struck me as so awkward and bad.
Yeah, I mean, aside from that, it's just a reality. Like, what did this serve? The idea that you need to give these guys a last-minute save to make sure that they're still monsters, I find, is asinine. Because it didn't help anything. We didn't think, oh, my God, Braun's still a monster. No, we knew that already. And we didn't think Reigns, oh, we're so sympathetic towards him. You know, we're not. And that's not what you want us to be. That you've proven that over and over again. So why the extra attack? It wasn't self-serving. It wasn't serving to anything. It's just one of those things that they feel they have to do. And both with Nia and Braun, it just came off as superfluous in the long run because they still did what they did tonight. And I think that had either one of those episodes not happened last night, tonight would have still been the same and nobody would have been in disbelief.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can't think of anything else specific to cover from the pay-per-view aside from the two, you know, big matches. Do you think they're going to go with a slow burn Sasha turn, or that was it and we obviously saw what happened tonight, but we have, what, 5-6 weeks between now and Mania? I'm assuming we're going to get Bayley versus Sasha, which I'm looking forward to.
Yeah,
you know what?
I mean,
just going to Raw.
Okay, well, real quick before we go into Raw, what would you have graded Chamber since we talked about it, basically?
On the scale of 1 to Ty Dillinger, probably like a 7. Like, I don't know. I noticed myself having fun watching the pay-per-view, but I think it's just because of the season that we're in. In terms of quality, like, nothing was bad, but, you know, it was kind of there. And again, I just expect more from an Elimination Chamber match, and I didn't get it. And I'm not saying a bloodied forehead or someone dying or breaking glass, but I just feel like there's a way to create drama, and they kind of stripped it away from that particular match.
No, I agree with you completely. So I personally would have given it like a 5.5, like barely above average, because after the opening match with the women, like, that was really hot. That was great. It was laid out perfectly. Mandy Rose didn't get exposed. It was such a good match, and they utilized the cage for some big spots, but nothing crazy. And then it was just all downhill from there. And it's like, oh, that was a disappointing ride.
Yeah. So Raw happened. And since we don't have Harry here, I figured we'd just go from top to bottom. We'll skip a few things. We'll add a little bit more. We'll focus on the bigger stories. But we started the show with an amazing piece of ass, also a great wrestler. They're the same person, Alexa. Alexa came out, and Mickey came out with her, which I thought was a little weird. She gloated a little bit, you know, just basically one thing that I wanted to talk about specifically, the what chant, Alexa, I think, handled that pretty damn well. Just to summarize, she talked shit, Asuka came out, talked more shit, and then Nia came out to attack Asuka, Asuka gets an armbar, Bliss and Mickey make the save, and then Bayley and Banks come out, and they all fight. Of course, this leads to a 6-person tag match, which, if you didn't see that coming, then you haven't watched wrestling long enough. So we'll talk about both the promo beforehand and the match itself. Specifically, Bayley doing a little bit of revenge to Sasha, and whether or not this worked. It's hard for me, you know, when the WWE has their mindset on a particular match, they do one of two things. They stretch it so long that it doesn't matter anymore by the time it happens, such as Matt Hardy and Bray, or they're well aware that it happened, so they ignore it completely until they get there and, again, create a world in which people don't care. WrestleMania, they seem to add a little bit more stress to storytelling, and usually it comes off good. But you could kind of see the wheels turning here between Bayley and Sasha, where it's more of a slow burn. They'll eventually get to what I feel is going to be a one-on-one match at Mania. The promo, well, first of all, we'll tackle, because there's a couple of things going on here. Do you feel that Alexa Bliss's promo opening was pointless, was a good way to start the show, or was just leading, you know, to the eventual 6-person tag?
Yeah, I really feel like it was a means to an end kind of promo, where I agree that she dealt with the crowd chants or interference, whatever you want to call it, she dealt with those fairly well, because if it's one thing that everybody's agreed on, even if you have an issue with her in-ring ability, she's very good on the mic. Granted, yes, she plays stereotypical head cheerleader mean girl, which that's probably not hard for most women, but still, she's good at what she does. She sells it well. And it did come off really kind of cookie cutter. It felt very similar to what she did at the end of the Chamber match, where she kind of went into a couple more face lines and then turned it onto the whole, well, none of you are going to achieve your dreams because you're not me and I'm better than you kind of shit. So
yeah,
that felt a little redundant and played out. And I agree with you, the whole Mickey thing, it's awkward. Like, I know they have history. I know it kind of makes sense because Mickey looked like she trusted Alexa going into Chamber, and Alexa did nothing to rupture that trust. So logically, I guess you could say Mickey could still believe that they're friends again. So sure, it's a stretch, but it's sure. And yeah, it was just a means to an end. Why did you feel differently?
No, I feel that's exactly what it was. Also, the Mickey thing is, yeah, I could side with the idea that, you know, they didn't really have much contact in the Elimination Chamber. So one could assume that, yeah, they're still friends. But at the same time, Mickey James really gained from associating herself with her. And how does that make her a heel all of a sudden? These are the little things that bother me. Like when they attack Asuka, like, when has Mickey James ever been that person since her return, basically? The one to just attack someone in a 3-on-1 attack. Of course, I don't really care. It's Mickey James. She's not really a big deal to me in terms of story. But it's just like, what are we doing here? Like, did we just need another heel? And is that what we're doing with her?
I mean, that could be. It seems like she could have just been placed in there either so more people get a place on WrestleMania, or because Absolution, you know, Paige got injured, so that took out the three women heel group, so they needed to insert a third person with the Alexa Nia dynamic. So it could have just been plug and play. That's a fair point.
Yeah. So after that, what happened? Oh yeah, that guy. What was his name? John Cena.
Oh yeah, him. That was
yeah. So he came out and he was super sad Cena for a moment. Denzel Washington and John Q, and then he switched it up and turned into Denzel Washington, American Gangster. One thing about Cena is that when he has a fire in him, the promos come off really, really well, but they ultimately say nothing new, and I fail to understand how we could believe in John Cena not having a path to WrestleMania. We talked about this a little bit before the show, the whole tease of the Undertaker thing, while it does prove that the crowd at the end of the day will eat whatever comes out of his mouth, I do wonder what the reason for it was, mainly because it did nothing in terms of John Cena. He's supposed to be this super sad guy, not really wondering about where he's going to go in the future, what his match is, and he throws that out there. Now, if it's a red herring, then I don't get it. I don't get why he did it. If it's something that is coming, which I know I'm in the smaller group, but I think that they're still going that route, even after the WWE 24. I don't want them to. I don't have an interest in it, but I think that they're going to. And because I can't see of any other option that is worth having. I don't want him against Shane. I don't want him in the Styles Nakamura. I mean, is he going to go to the U.S. title? You know, maybe I'm not opposed to that. I don't know. But the promo itself was everything I dislike about John Cena. Super emotional. Nothing really important to say. And ultimately, just, we'll see you tomorrow. What do you think? Do you think that it was a good promo? Do you think that it led to anything important? And what do you think is going to happen tomorrow?
Random music?
Hello?
did you put me on hold?
No, I lost connection for just a second. But no, you were.
Oh, that's what it is.
Everybody.
I'm like, I'm just starting to hear
everybody
random ass music.
Me. Oh, did you? That's weird.
Yes, it starts playing like this random, like some kind of guitar music, and I'm like, what the hell is going on?
Like,
I thought you had a soundbite I've never heard, so I'm like, what the hell does this mean?
That was an Elias guitar solo.
Oh, nice, nice, nice. It sounded like a little bit of like a flamenco kind of thing, so it's nice to see he's branching out. But
yeah,
you know,
he's a
Cena. Yeah, so Cena, I like the fact that he played with the crowd, because so many wrestling fans nowadays always think they're the smark. It's like the meme, or yeah, I guess it is kind of a meme that's going around right now with the whole Rick and Morty stuff, where, you know, like 90% of Rick and Morty fans who watch the show think they're Rick, but they're really a Jerry. It's the same concept with WWE fans, where everybody thinks they're a smark and they're smarter than the average fan and they know what's going to go on. But then Cena pulls that kind of crap, hyping The Undertaker, and then the crowd blew up. That's the loudest I heard them the entire show. And the beauty of that small moment was when he said, it's not going to happen. He then validated that with, now you know what it feels like to be disappointed. So he was trying really hard to get this disappointment angle over, which that's different for him because he's usually Mr. Super Babyface, kind of positive, figure out a way and power through. So that was a different aspect to his character, I suppose, that we don't see too often. So that was nice. But yeah, the promo did nothing. The only thing it did was technically preview SmackDown, because he's going to go there and try to weasel his way into something or beat somebody or find some way onto a pay-per-view or onto Mania. So that's good news for SmackDown, because Cena might end up on Fastlane, and people were kind of writing off Fastlane as something not exactly necessary to watch. So I guess that's something, right? Maybe?
Yeah, I guess, you know. Do you think he's going to be inserting himself into a match with Shane or the AJ Styles versus Nakamura, or do you think it's something completely different?
I mean, it was a joke amongst a bunch of people in the chair shot message groups and probably stuff you've seen too, where everybody's saying now Fastlane's going to have to bump their main event up to 7 people because Elimination Chamber had 7. So, I mean, this would make 6. So, you know, why not? It's WWE. It's not beyond them to try to, as we already said before, kind of copy and paste, or just they always think more people is a better match. So, yeah, maybe turn the 5-way into a 6-way because he's Cena. He doesn't need an excuse to get a title shot. He's Cena, right? Didn't he say
he really
that a few months ago?
Yeah, that's what he said. And that's why I stood by my point of Roman Reigns not needing to go, you know, to so many lengths just to get a title shot when all you have to do is say, wait a minute, I'm Reigns.
He is the Samoan sex machine. You can't stop him.
Right? Look at that hair. Okay, so, Bray Wyatt is still alive and still doing things, and none of them are entertaining. He came out tonight.
Yeah, I was about to say, does that count, really?
Yeah, he didn't even really have a match. He just beat up Slater and Rhino, which no one believes. But, you know, credit to Slater for selling like a motherfucker for him. So yeah, I mean, are you interested at all in what will inevitably be Matt Hardy versus Bray Wyatt 3 at WrestleMania?
Well, A, the whatever you want to call that he had at Raw, the only thing that interests me is, does this mean that they drop the whole Rhino trying to make Heath Slater tough kind of angle? Because, you know, that was a fun little undercard, you know, comedy angle, just throwing him into random stupid shit just to try to toughen him up and maybe make them a legitimate tag team again. So
yeah.
I guess that could be over now because there was absolutely no reference to that. And then Rhino inserted himself like immediately. So he's not really trying to teach or impart any kind of wisdom. So I guess that's done. And when it comes to a match, maybe if it's a Final Deletion style, like not a House of Horrors, because that was, I guess, their final deletion knockoff, and that was painful. That was a pile of crap.
But if
Hardy gets a little bit more say, and now that they have Borash, at least under the WWE umbrella, he could help to bring back the broken universe magic kind of thing. So, sure, because Bray did reference the Great War, so if they do a Great War at the Hardy compound type thing, maybe. That could maybe make it interesting, but that's a stretch because it is kind of broken and shitty at the moment.
Broken. Yeah, they
yeah, you see what I did there.
Yeah, and it's not, you know what's sad? It's not all the writer's fault, and I'm the one that's always blaming the writers. It's just the complete lack of interest in Bray Wyatt. No one cares. No one thinks for a second that he's worthy of facing Matt Hardy. And then Matt Hardy has not been given the time to be unique enough. And you couple that with the idea that the commentary team simply does not know how to sell this at all. You know, they laugh at it. They mock it. They make it out to be Matt being just crazy. I'm not saying that they need to buy into it completely, but at the very least, give it some semblance of seriousness so that, you know, if you undercut it before we even do it, you know, like, we're allowed to make fun of it because we're the fans, but you're supposed to be selling us this shit. And believe me, you have sold us worse. We're supposed to believe that Roman is a big, big dog, but we can't believe for a second that Matt Hardy may have cracked a little bit after what's happened to him. Like, why not dive deeper into that? Why not give us layers that we could sink our teeth into? Do you truly not trust us as viewers to understand that a man has, after losing so much, has cracked mentally? Is that too psychological of a grasp to concept? Because I watched a father fish lose his son and chase through miles of ocean to find him.
Oh,
and
my
I feel
God,
like that was more in depth than what they're showing us with the broken Matt Hardy.
I mean, yeah, and Elimination Chamber's pre-show panel didn't help either, because literally Booker, Renee, Otunga, and Rosenberg, I think, was the fourth one, whoever it was, they basically buried them as both crazy guys. Because after the promo, Renee was just like, I don't even know which one to pick. And then Booker was kind of like, I'll pick the crazy one. And then the other was like, wait, which one's the crazy one? It's like, what the fuck, you idiots? You're just making them out to be like two morons who just lost their straitjackets and decided to wrestle in the middle of a ring. And you've completely invalidated that. Plus, I guess it would be, I guess, dumb of us not to mention, whoever might have had interest in Bray may have also turned against him because of the whole JoJo affair scandal. So Bray
That's
is not exactly the best person to have on television in general, because not only is he not a believable character in his ability to actually win something, people like him significantly less because of that whole divorce affair situation. So he really would have benefited from like not being on TV for a while after the meningitis, and just say he's going to like some kind of shaman for an exorcist on Sister Abigail or something like that, and then wait a few months and then do the exorcism and then have it backfire and he becomes Sister Abigail, or he becomes stronger or darker or something like that. That would have probably benefited the character more, but now we're stuck with what we're stuck with. Hooray.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I don't feel compelled. When he comes on the television, I tune it out. I type with no actual feeling. I used to write out Bray Wyatt's promos word for word because I was so enthralled by them. I loved the delivery. I understood what he was saying. I'm not saying I'm smarter than everyone. I'm saying that his stuff wasn't all that hard to take in. But now it's just like, well, you're giving me emptiness every single time. So I don't really have any interest in it. So immediately after Bray Wyatt, you know, oh, also your point to Rhino's little thing. Yeah, I loved it too. It was an easy excuse to get Heath Slater in a match with anyone, regardless of losing or not. Mm-hmm. So it does suck that it went away. So speaking of people that suck, Miz came out with Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel.
Good segue.
And he went on to talk about WrestleMania, his title. Miz did what the Miz always does. He comes out, he cuts a super passionate promo, does really well with it. And ultimately, he is challenged by Seth Rollins. This leads into a match which I thought was really, really well put out, did really good. The only unfortunate thing was possibly the fact that The Miz lost. And this is only compounded due to the fact that immediately after that match, The Miz faced Finn Balor and lost again. I feel like it's The Miz, so it's not too big of a deal if he loses. But losing back-to-back after, you know, losing two matches in a row after facing someone for a lengthy amount of time, I get the idea that they want Seth Rollins and Finn to be the challengers. They're probably looking at a triple threat, which is going to be amazing if that's where they're going. But I don't see why Finn had to win this one. I don't know. I'm torn right here. Maybe you can help me out. Where basically the two matches were amazing. They were also really, really, really well put together. The Miz did more than his part. And he continues to be an amazing wrestler. 2017 and 18 is just a new Miz, really. Are you okay with him losing back-to-back matches, being the champion? Do you hold true to that statement that a lot of people make, that the guy should not be losing if he has the belt? Because I feel constantly that the belt is simply a tool to tell a good story. So if there's a loss involved, sometimes it's okay. Do you think tonight was one of those times?
I do, and to hit the whole loss point first, I am reminded of the whole Honky Tonk Man big intercontinental run. Tell me if I'm wrong, because I may have misread or misremembered, but when it was all the house shows that he was defending the belt, apparently, or having matches, he lost. He had one of the biggest losing streaks that just weren't televised. So it was one of those concepts where he won the money matches, but he probably had one of the worst win-loss records out of a champion at that time. Does that sound right?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
Okay, I wasn't sure if I was misremembering or something like that. So it's very reminiscent to that, where Miz is a cocky heel. He can absorb losses because it's perfectly within his character. I mean, his character is kind of just a half-ass moves because in the promo with him and Maryse before the Cena-Bella WrestleMania intergender crap fest tag match, you would actually see them train. And he knows how to throw a good round kick. He knows how to strike. But that's just not the Miz. That's not the character. If you watch the Marine movies, which they're actually tolerable with him in it, surprisingly, like I almost bit my own tongue saying that, but, you know, they're not that bad. And he plays a convincing enough badass. It's just the Miz character himself is supposed to be weak. He's supposed to be the weaselly heel that needs help and that needs all this other stuff. Perfectly fine. It's within character. He can eat the losses. My major, major issue with this whole, whatever it was, 40 minutes, 45 minutes, why? What does Finn coming out and challenging an already beaten down, beaten and tired Miz, what does that do for him? Like, why does that suddenly prove that he deserves a shot at this title? Do you have an answer for that one?
No, but Cole does, because that's apparently exactly what it means. His hyperbole is so bothersome. His rhetorical questions are annoying as shit. And it happened a lot during this. Does this mean Finn is going to get a shot at the IC title? That's got to mean this. Oh, Seth is certainly a shoo-in for the IC. Shut up. We're going to get that on our own. Thank you very much. Yeah, I don't know. Finn is not the type, as far as what they've shown us, to challenge the Miz of all people on his second match after a lengthy one with Seth Rollins. That does not strike me as very Finn-like. Just to reiterate what you said, the Miz is the Miz, man. And I feel like if there's anybody who's going to be able to pull out of two losses, it's the Miz. He's lost so much, and all he's got to do is cut a promo saying, I work hard day in, day out. I'm here busting my ass, blah, blah, blah. And that loss is eradicated. And you know what? We're okay with it because the Miz is the Miz.
Definitely.
Yeah, so those two matches happened. I mean, I want to give the matches some love. They were really, really good matches. I think something could have changed in between them. But they didn't. That's what they showed us. And ultimately, this will lead to what is likely a triple threat at WrestleMania. And, I mean, I'm interested in that. Do you think – are you at all?
I mean, I can't say I'm not, because last week when I was discussing things with Christopher Platt and on Pot is War, we kind of were talking about where Seth could go because we didn't give him a shot in the chamber. And honestly, I said this whole three-way for the Intercontinental thing exactly on the show last week. So I would kind of be, you know, spiting my nose to save my face if I said I didn't like it. So I'm like,
right.
I kind of backed myself into the corner with that one, but I mean, it's not a bad idea. It gets all three people onto WrestleMania. It will probably be a decent enough match with Finn and Seth, cause they're workhorses, and Miz definitely knows how to add to a match and do his thing and not look out of place. So I'm like, excited may not be the right word, but I'm pretty sure I'll enjoy whatever match they put on.
Yeah, I'm excited. Okay, so we go to – okay, this – you know what's funny? When I found out that you and I were doing the show without Harry, Harry is a – he's like a cold pillow, you know? He's really comforting, takes care of you, lets you ease into bed, not really a, you know, like a, oh, I'm knocked out, but kind of just slowly get to sleep. And I also think that he bridges a gap. You and I are seemingly, just by the podcast alone, relatively intelligent people, but we watch wrestling in a completely different way. And Roman Reigns is a subject that I think if there was ever going to be a difference of opinions, it would have been that. And I'm pretty sure tonight I'm going to make a prediction that we are going to get along pretty well in terms of what we think about Roman Reigns tonight. I will first say that I have disliked the character for a very long time. I find that the swagger is unfounded. I find that his promos are either stilted or fake and fraudulent, meaning I can't believe in the person that's portrayed. And I also find that they what they expect from him does not correlate with what the character portrays. Tonight, I saw something completely different. I was completely amazed. I loved every word that came out of his mouth. I don't know who wrote this. It doesn't sound like the usual Roman guy. So, like, maybe they switched it up. Maybe they focused a little bit. But this was exactly what was needed to be said if they want Roman Reigns to be the 100% face going in. Because Brock, in terms of crowd support, will obliterate Roman. And you notice that the minute he came out. They booed him after every syllable. They did not stop until he picked up the pace and went in on his promo. So how do you feel about Roman Reigns' statement tonight? And do you think that this will lead into a continuation of this shoot-style promo stuff that will eventually lead to a very, very strong face reign? Do you think basically that this is going to save the Roman Reigns character?
Save is a strong word, because I do remember a lot of people enjoying his promo battles with Cena. Like, after the first one where Cena obviously, like, just beat the hell out of him when he kind of forgot his line, they let Roman be a little more natural, either in the scripting or maybe they told him just to follow bullet points, and Roman actually won some of those promos. And that was the first real glimpse we had to him settling into the character. And this was a reaffirmation of that, because we haven't really seen comfortable Roman, because then when they put the Shield back together, he was Shield Roman, where he was just the quiet enforcer who was the badass who looked at his hand and did his Superman punch and his spear and just looked good. So this is really, really the first time we've had a shot for him to speak openly and somewhat passionately. And yeah, he completely nailed it. And the best part about this, which I don't know if they thought of it ahead of time, so they built it well enough, but Heyman is a much different promo than Cena. Cena has a tendency to like to go last and bury the guy and still get himself over regardless of how good the first person did. Look at the Roman feud that I was talking about before. Look at Miz from last year, when we know Miz is one of the best talkers and Cena still made him look dumb sometimes, because Cena still had to get the last word in, or he had a snarky little remark here or there just to kind of invalidate whatever the other person was saying. Heyman is old school in the concept where you're the heel. You're supposed to make yourself or your client in this respect look good and look like he's the best, still get the other guy over. So Heyman will have plenty of times where he's, you know, cowering and not trying to upset Roman or putting Roman over as being $1 million and the only the second person or the only the other person to beat Undertaker and the only other person that could be, you know, Lesnar's equal, but, you know, that kind of thing, and then twist it into, but he's still Brock and he's the beast incarnate, so even though you're the closest thing, you're still, you know, not even, you know, you're really far second place kind of thing. So however that promo plays out, it should still be really good. And as long as Roman can continue this natural cadence instead of that really slow attempting to be cool and, you know, kind of talking at everybody instead of relating like a person, yeah, this will be fine. This should be his quote-unquote coming out, and if it's not, then somebody screwed something up somewhere.
Yeah, and he'll likely never come out. You know, one thing that I wanted to talk about with this promo specifically, and one thing that I think that if all of our five listeners are as, you know, snarky as we are, then they're going to say basically that Roman Reigns cut the same promo that John Cena cut over and over again against Brock. And while I won't disagree, I do have to say that Roman did it better, because when Cena did it, you didn't believe him. I mean, I didn't, at least. I didn't believe him. I didn't believe him talking about a part-timer coming in, blah, 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 because John Cena was essentially doing the same thing. The character didn't work. That didn't work with me. With Reigns, even though he doesn't bring up his family a lot, even though it's brought up by other people, just that alone is proof enough. And him being part of the group, that also made him more human. Every single time Roman talks, he's like, you know, I could beat everybody, blah, 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 blah. This is different. This is like, hey, we don't like you, Brock. I don't know if you know that. None of us like you. You know, like, we're not fans. We don't like what you've done. We don't like the fact that we had a pay-per-view and you were with Dana White in the same city at the same time, not giving a damn who's going to face you, even though that fits Brock's profile. Reigns doing that angle, as long as he keeps it like a battle where he's fighting for not just wrestling but the wrestling fans, I think that he'll actually have a crowd of support. But the minute he starts going to that lone wolf, big dog, my yard, all of that, none of that, no one likes that. No one's a fan of that. You're not to the status of The Undertaker. And I don't believe The Undertaker ever had to say that unless he was like riding a motorcycle to the ring. Aside from that, he never had to say it. The Dead Man never said that. It just was. So, yeah, the point that I'm trying to make is Cena has made this promo before. I feel like Roman did it better, and I think that that's a big compliment to him. You might want to record that soundbite, because it's unlikely that I'll say it again.
Oh, well, when we post it up, I'll make sure that if I need it, I'll get it. Don't worry about that.
So immediately after Roman speaks, we had The Bar facing Titus Worldwide, and the immediate question is, what? we get a 2 out of 3 falls match, not even a regular match. But I don't know why this happened. I don't know where they were going with this, but I'm glad, because I got a little afraid that they were going to give the belts to Titus and Apollo. How'd you feel about it?
You bought into the possibility of Titus Worldwide winning? Like,
I bought into the possibility of the WWE pissing me off. That's what I bought.
Okay, that's a fair point. I mean, I didn't care. Logically, let's go logic side for half a second. It makes sense, because the Bar still has lost more times to Titus Worldwide than vice versa up to this point tonight. So it's fair to say that Titus Worldwide still had an edge on them. So a 2 out of 3 falls match would kind of be not necessarily the rubber match, but, you know, the kind of thing to just bury the rivalry and just decisively figure out who's the best and be done with it. my major problem with this match was the fact that they did the first pinfall in like 10 seconds. I mean, I didn't mind that it was on Titus, because that means he was out of the match most of the time, and the less of him in the ring, the happier I am. But the fact that it was just like bell rings, Titus turns around, brogue kick, 1, 2, 3. It's like, we already didn't take this team seriously, and then you just had them lose in the first like 10 seconds. Like, or lose the first pinfall in the first 10 seconds. It's like, really? Like, that's what we're going with here? And then sure, the second pinfall was slightly better, because Apollo's just a more of a work rate kind of wrestler, and he's better to more fun to watch, and he sells fairly well, and he's really starting to come into his own.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it was what it was. It was probably slightly better than their match at Elimination Chamber, but that's not saying much. And the fact that the bar went over 2-0, that at least cleanly should put an end to this, and there should be no more doubt, because it's 2-0. Like, Titus Worldwide didn't even have a shot at this point. Like, it's done. We're over. The bar wins. Move on to the Revival or the Club or whoever's next in line.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I feel like it's either there just to fill space, or, I mean, I really don't know. They won last night. There was really no reason for tonight. It wasn't even a good match to begin with. You know, the bro kick, I mean, I'll give props to Titus. As a big dude, he sold that pretty well. It was both painful but shocking, too. Like, this motherfucker just kicked me in the face. Like he looked like Chris Tucker from Rush Hour. Like, which one of y'all just kicked me? Like, he was – I think that he sold it really well.
Yeah.
And there's very few times where I'm going to give Titus props, so I wanted to give that as, you know, that the promo that they cut after the match also kind of led to nothing. Seemed like a pretty big waste of time and wasn't that good. I'm not really sure where they were going with that. Do you think that this promo was basically saying we're going to get a bunch of teams to face Sheamus and Cesaro for the belts on WrestleMania?
No. No.
Okay.
Please, no tag team gauntlet. That would hurt me. Plus, it's 6 weeks away or 5 weeks away, whatever it happens to be. So there is no way they can't put together some kind of program in 5 weeks to, you know, clear up the tag team issue. Please.
I have said it many, many times before. The WWE has the capability to put together a story. They can make shit happen in one show. They just suck at it. They could also make shit happen in 5 weeks. They just suck at it. I don't know what it is. For every one good story that WWE has, I feel like there's 7 or 8 where you're just like, what? I don't – okay. Well, okay, let's ride this ride. You know?
Oh, definitely.
So what happened after that? Oh, yeah, Braun versus Eli. I call him Eli because it's easier to type. I know it's only 2 letters, but, man, that shit matters. So Braun versus Elias, I mean, was this just another Bar versus Bar versus Titus and Apollo? It felt like a filler for sure. I didn't really gain anything from it. There wasn't anything significant about it. He chased Elias all the way out of the arena, one of the few men to get away from him. And then the limo pulls up, and you never figure out who's in the limo. Like, what was that? The obvious, you could guess Triple H and Steph. I mean, it's not Ronda because she wants to be treated like everybody else, right?
She was also already there.
Really,
it was down.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's really weird. Like, okay, well, thanks for that. I don't know. It was just another one of those things. You know, not mentioned. You didn't have to mention it. We could understand who it is. But also, if you're going to put it on TV, it's got to be there for a reason. Typically, that's what the adage is. How'd you feel about the match?
No. I mean, it wasn't really a match. Like, the one thing I will give them is that at least Elias got a little more offense in than I expected. And getting disqualified because he brought out the fire extinguisher was kind of better than just getting destroyed. So that obviously lends itself to dragging out this mini rivalry between the two of them. So I don't know if I like that, because that doesn't really – I don't think that's got six weeks worth of legs right there. That seems like 2 or 3, and then we're done. So unless
they're
bringing back –
that match.
Yeah, I really don't either. But unless they're bringing back Kane, like, it becomes a joke where, like, they run into the back again, since one of the other times, like, Braun did something to Kane, it was in the back, and then Elias just ran out through the back. So maybe Kane will just jump him and show back up because, you know, he slunk away from the hospital. So who knows? Maybe that's where we're going. We're going for, like, a three-way between Elias, Kane, and Braun, or maybe just Kane and Braun in, like, a Buried Alive match or something like that at WrestleMania, or a casket match or something. Maybe. Maybe that's where that goes, is, like, the final, final send-off for that rivalry, which I'm not excited for that either, but I guess that's still better than Elias and Braun. The one thing I did really like was all of the Megadeth references, because me being a big thrash metal fan myself, you know, I love the whole Symphony of Destruction, and one of the few times I appreciated, you know, Corey making references. Usually he goes with Pantera, and he likes, like, Vulgar Display of Power and, you know, Primal Concrete Sledge and stuff like that, but this time he went for Symphony, and I was okay with that.
Yeah, all right. I think Kane is on his way to Haddonfield to kill Laurie Strode. I'm not sure, but I think that's where he's headed. I have zero interest in Kane at WrestleMania too. I don't know what they're going to do with Braun. I'm hoping that this isn't it. Chances are he'll end up in the Andre the Giant Battle Royal and win it. And but yeah, the fire extinguisher, we haven't seen that in a while.
Hey, it was nice that he literally just busted it out of nowhere, because it was a good equalizer, and Braun definitely sold the whole blinded thing. Probably a little too long, but at least he sold it well enough that was the reason why Elias got away, because Braun just couldn't find him, you know, fast enough to chase him down and tackle him. But yeah,
he should probably talk to Nia a little bit about selling things. okay, so this leads us to our main event segment with Rowdy Ronda Rousey. Triple H and Steph come out, and they want to clear the air about what happened last night. They want everyone to come down, apologize, say exactly what they want to say. And this was a little bit of a night and day thing with Ronda. Last night, she was all smiles, hair down, happy to be here, Ronda. This week, she was no nonsense, don't fuck with me. I've never been slapped before in my life, and I have zero interest in never having it happen again. She rushed down the ramp, ready to do something stupid. And Kurt Angle stopped her, and he claimed that he lied about everything last night. He had the flu, blah, blah, blah. But you saw the truth, him saying he needs this job. It's unfortunate that the crowd laughed at him heavily when he said that. Stephanie willing to bite the bullet and apologize hugely also was an interesting twist. We end this with Triple H giving a hard right hook to Kurt Angle before leaving, like a cheap shot, whether it be revenge from last night or just, you know, maybe Kurt had some mustard on his chin and Kurt was trying to help him, or Triple H was trying to help him out. I don't know. I will say this, Ronda Rousey was way better tonight than she was last night. I feel like her being a badass is easier than her being the grateful wrestling fan. And you also have to be very careful with that particular stance. A lot of wrestling fans won't bite onto that for some reason. We've seen it happen before where the wrestler is like, I'm just a big fan, I'm just like you guys, and it never really goes over well. I don't know why, but the Ronda that we got tonight I think will work significantly better than anything that we got last night. What do you think?
The wrestlers that were fans that became wrestlers, they're kind of portrayed as doofuses, so that doesn't really help. You know, like the first two that pop into mind, obviously one was a gimmick that wouldn't fly nowadays, but the two that pop into mind are Eugene and Bailey. And yes, I'm not saying Bailey's, you know, special, but like she's not taken seriously. She's seen as childlike at all points. And Alexa's buried her constantly, saying like she's just a, you know, like a teenager. She's like a 10-year-old. Da 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 da. So and,
right down
you know,
to the side ponytail.
Exactly. And Corey buries everything about her down to be like, oh, only 12-year-olds like her, you know, insults Byron and then insults her kind of indirectly or by association, whatever you want to call that. So that, like, Bailey and Eugene are like the two examples that pop out to me. So they never paint fans of wrestling as, you know, intelligent or, you know, kind of like attractive or smart or strong. They just
Which is
paint
kind of
them
insulting,
as nerds.
Man.
I agree with you completely. Like, maybe it's supposed to be like that, like whole kind of I don't know what the words left my mind, but it's kind of like that whole fourth wall break almost, where it's like that nice little subtle, not so subtle jab at how Vince perceives the fans and how Vince thinks, you know, considers all of our opinions, because he's just like, you're just a bunch of nerds and whatever I show you, you're going to eat up anyway. So fuck off.
Yeah, Bailey. Tony.
Yeah, that's what he's telling you. He's like, you are Bailey. How do you feel about that? Like, you've got a nice ass, though. I'll give you that one.
Amen to that.
But so Rhonda might be able to get over with the fan aspect if she keeps up the badass thing, because I agree with you completely that it was more natural tonight than it was last night, because last night it was weird and it was too much of a, like, turn on a dime, because she went from sobbing and being grateful to then Kurt, you know, brought up the allegations and then she got all serious and pissed off all of a sudden. So it's like she went from sweet to pissed. So that was kind of an odd change. Granted, it logically made sense with the information that was presented, but it was still odd to see like the two aspects of the personality without any kind of like gradual progression or segue or even line from her that kind of helped to build to one way or the other. So sure, the
confusion, just adulation to anger, which usually only happens during sex. So
I'm not going to disagree with that one. So the promo at the end was also stupid in the fact that Kurt made it very obvious that he was just saying it because he needed the job. So it wasn't refuting anything that he said last night. It wasn't saying they were really right, because he prefaced it with, I really need the job. So, I have double pneumonia, super flu, SARS, I don't know, brain herpes, whatever the fuck it was.
Not that good anymore. I don't know what happened. If he's not stuttering over his lines, he's just bad at delivery in general.
I mean, Shawn Michaels isn't what he used to be either. He used to be so smooth and so quick when it came to giving promos and just banter. And then have you seen him on, like, panels? Like, he starts getting stuttery and he just starts kind of, like, not making sense or spacing out and then trying to bring it back to the point. But it sounds like an old man just, you know, rambling off into the distance. So maybe there's something to be said about PPE.
Yeah, his promos are lazier than his eye. Bad.
Hey. Still though. Yeah, but that promo was trash at the end, honestly. Just to sum it up without credit.
I didn't even enjoy last night. That shit came out of nowhere. And you can give me the excuse that Angle was mad about Survivor Series or he hates Triple H or something, but it just was like, wait, what are we doing? When did this? Oh, okay. I guess. I mean, I'm pretty sure there's a better way to do this, but yeah, let's. All right, fuck it. And then it resulted in Rhonda coming off pretty bad. And yeah, I didn't really. I know we didn't talk about that at the beginning of the show, but I did not enjoy that moment in particular.
But yeah, they had all the time in the world, and they didn't do any kind of weird, like little Kurt Angle kind of moments in the back with Hunter and Stephanie to kind of prove that maybe he was a little disgruntled or he was a little like, wow, I can't believe you guys said that. And then if it looked like the camera caught it at the very end and Kurt said something like, I can't believe you guys just said that. And Hunter said something like, shut up and just go with it. Like, you got to be out there, play your part. Like, that would have been perfect. That would have been enough. And then this would have all made sense. But there was
How many times I have said all they needed was this little 1 5-second segment in the back to save this. I mean, it's so common where it's just, that's all you guys need. That's it, you know? every time I say that, you know, they need to let the audience figure things out, blah, 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 I mean that. And yet, whenever there's a point where they might need some exposition, they totally blank out on that. Like, you're trusting us with the wrong things. But aside from that, it's just really bad storytelling.
Oh, definitely. And this didn't help. And then Triple H punching Kurt, that also seemed random as hell, too, because they had him come out, basically prostrate himself in the ring because he was taking the piss out of everything he fucking said beforehand, putting them over that he was just sick and, like, delusional, and then Triple H sneaks him anyway. And it's like, what? Like, why did we just do this 10 minutes of bullshit when you're going to hit him anyway and basically do what you did with Mick Foley a year ago and just piss him off to the point of where he says something like, screw you, I don't really need this job. It's going to be Kurt and Ronda versus Stephanie and Triple H, or Kurt versus Triple H with Stephanie and Ronda in the, you know, respective corners.
Yeah.
And, like, why would you spend so much of this promo trying to erase what was obvious from last night just to kind of continue it anyway on his terms, because he's Triple H and fuck you, it's his way or the highway, I guess. What the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah, Triple H should not be the guy that cheap shots someone because, you know, it's old Kurt Angle. Like, I don't know. I just, it's not believable for me. And if something's not believable, then I can't readily latch onto the story. If I can't latch onto the story, I get mad. And if I get mad, I watch, you know, different kind of wrestling, and I'm pretty sure that's not what they want from me. So.
The one thing I did notice, which I tweeted out when I was doing the chair shot live tweeting, was this was probably the first time in the history of me watching wrestling in general that the crowd was chanting "rip it off" towards two women, and they weren't talking about clothing.
Oh, they weren't? Because I was. No,
Shut up.
I totally agree.
You know they were talking about her arm.
Women are changing, and so too is the world around it. I'm happy about it. Yeah. I have no qualms about it. Ronda Rousey's a badass.
2018 is crazy, man.
Well. It's a wild year.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's not bad. It's not like I said it negatively. I just thought it was funny. Because
right.
Usually that was for,
how
like, you know, a brawn panties match. What?
Bring back our boobs.
Oh, what, did Jerry Lawler just show up?
Puppies!
But yeah. All right. So, is there anything else you want to touch on now that we've finished the show?
No, that's pretty much it. That's Raw. Raw as it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was really a wonderful after pay-per-view.
No, not really. I mean, you would think that they're going full speed ahead, but again, this happens all the time. They realize that they have 5 to 6 weeks to fill, so they're like, shit, what are we going to do? Instead of saying, man, we got all this time to make something awesome. Let's sit down and crank this out. Like, what do we got? Who are we going to say first? Who do we want to see wrestle? Now let's build a story around these two. Who are these characters? What do they like and dislike about each other? Let's run this shit. I feel like they don't do that.
No, I don't disagree with you, because the way things are laid out make absolutely no sense for you to actually think that there was a long-term plan and that everybody in the boardroom or the war room or whatever they call it when they decide to write out the show actually agreed and made sense on something. Like,
I mean, I feel like this podcast is formatted better than the Raw show sometimes. And you know how well this is formatted.
At least you kind of have a format you keep to. That's kind of how that works. You can't say the same about Raw.
Yeah. So what was your favorite match or moment of tonight's show?
Favorite match or moment? I guess my favorite moment was probably Roman Reigns' promo, because that was just so good, and it finally showed Reigns in a light we're not used to seeing him in. So it could be, you know, a preview of things to come. Could being in very, very bold, like, header font, underlined, possibly italicized, maybe in a different color, because it's WWE. They could screw it up. What about you?
Yeah. Oh, I feel they're going to screw it up for sure. My favorite moment was probably the matches between Miz and Seth and Finn. The result, not so much, but the matches themselves, I'm a sucker for quality wrestling, and that was pretty damn good.
Fair enough.
Your least favorite match or moment?
So many things to pick from. It's probably got to be that ending promo, just because it emphasized how bad last night's was, and it I can't even say it insisted upon itself, because that would mean there was something to insist upon. It's just, it was there, it contradicted itself, like, multiple times within the same segment, and it was just stupid and clunky and just was a waste, a literal waste of the last 10 minutes. What was your least favorite?
I would have to say Bray Wyatt basically telling me that he's not done with Matt Hardy yet. Was not a fan. It was either that or... No, it was that.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah. And your MVP of Raw?
This is hard, because I was actually thinking about it since we've been talking, and it's a toss-up between Miz and Roman for me, just because of my previously explained whole, you know, favorite moment. And I feel like Roman did win the fans over in the crowd, who went from booing him to, as soon as he started bringing up valid points and burying Brock, the boos suddenly dissipated, and it wasn't Kevin Dunn's, you know, help. It was actually people cheering on his points. So Miz did work his ass off, though. I'll be biased and just say Roman, but it's really close. If I could do co-MVPs, it would be Roman and Miz, but I don't know if we do that here.
That's perfectly okay, because I'm going to give it to the Miz. Even in loss, I feel like the Miz did and continues to do just amazing work with his character, who he is, how he's portrayed, the meaning behind what this means, how he holds the prestige of the title so heavily, and yet loses. Like, it's different to lose and pretend you're not losing. It's different, but him, he's like, yeah, I lost, but I still got the belt. And this belt matters more than any other belt, and this is why. And I don't know, it's hard to not believe him. So yeah, he's definitely my MVP. And I will double your statement that Roman did really well tonight, so I could understand why you would choose him. Show rating for you.
I'm going to go 5 out of 10, because this was the epitome of average, and it was coming off of a show that I rated barely above average, so I didn't exactly have a lot of preconceived notions or expectations for it, and it still managed to just underwhelm left and right, save for the Roman promo and the Miz match, or matches, whatever you want to call that. But yeah, I'm gonna go 5 out of 10. How about yourself?
Actually, I'm thinking the exact same rating. Yeah, it was a lot dragging on. And although I said a few weeks ago that I'm very forgiving around this time, I'm not so forgiving to where I'm going to allow them to get lazy. And I feel that when they already have matches set in stone, or they assume they do, that's when they get the laziest. And I was hoping for the best, but it seems to be that they're going that route, that they're just going to kind of coast through a couple of things. There's not going to be any super dramatic moments. There's not going to be a huge turn for anyone. Even Sasha versus Bayley, they're doing the slow burn, when I feel like this was one of those things that could have worked with a immediate turn. The moment at Elimination Chamber, for example, the little, you know, Mufasa and Scar moment that they had, they could have made that dramatic. And that would have been the official Sasha turn. And that would have been it. That would have been like, I don't know, they could have had Bayley be injured. They could have had Sasha end it there to where she got the pin, where she, like, they could have went full Lion King and had her whisper something into her ear. Like, anything, and it would have been a turn, and they could have had Sasha just be the bitch that we know she could be. But instead, we're going with the slow burn. Bailey's going to try to one-up her with her, you know, bad girlness. And then Sasha's going to turn, but it's not going to be nearly as impactful as it would have been. And we're going to have to deal with that. And that makes me sad because I think that – and that's just one example of the many, many things that they're taking their time with but not adding any actual story to. You know what I mean?
I do, but that also reminds me of probably a throwaway line, but I'm curious what your opinion on it happens to be. During the big six-woman tag match that kind of kicked things off, Coach was talking about, like, there's you have to work as a team, and then Corey said something like, well, they're not a team, and he's like, well, it's a tag match. He's like, yeah, but there's no tag division, so obviously, since there's no tag belt, they're all going after a singles thing. Do you think that was a throwaway line? Because I know there's been a lot of speculation and a lot of desire for them to bring back a women's tag belt for the tag division. Do you think that was to gauge fan reception on, you know, ooh, a women's tag division would be cool, or da-da-da-da-da, or was it throwaway?
I think if it was Michael Cole that said it, then it would have been intentional and a way to sell that idea. But since it was Corey Graves, I think that was Corey Graves being Corey Graves. So I don't think that was to sell the idea of it possibly happening. And I'm not sure I would be okay with it happening. I don't think there's enough importance on it.
I don't think there's enough variety in the wrestlers either.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, what did we get today and why? We got heels versus faces because, just because. You know, like, there was no reason for that six-man tag. There was no reason for any of those girls to be like, you know what, let's team up tonight and beat those guys' ass. You know, Bailey and Sasha should not have gotten along well enough to team together for this match. They don't care right now, or at the very least, they're pissed off at each other, so teaming with them doesn't matter. Mickie James, as much as I want to say, yeah, it makes sense that she's still friends with Alexa. Again, what am I going to, like, why are we doing this? I'm good.
No, yeah, I agree. And that's always been my one contention back with when people say, well, we need a women's division, a tag division. I'm like, there's still only, like, what, 9 women on Raw. Like, well, you'd have to either combine the divisions and make it, like, a floating title, or – you know, maybe even bring more people up from NXT and have the women's division be much larger and rival that of the men's. But yeah, yeah, it didn't work in WWF when they did it back in like the late 80s and the early 90s. It didn't work in TNA when they tried to do it in like, what, 2007, 2008, back when their knockouts were still, you know, pretty strong and, you know, good wrestlers, and they had a decent roster. That still only lasted like maybe a year. So women's tag divisions don't really seem to have a lot of staying power on televised TV shows.
Nah.
All right.
Well, I guess that wraps it up.
I know. I was like, there we go. That I guess that's what we end on.
Yeah. We end on women not having enough power.
Oh boy. We're going to get some hate mail for that one.
Yeah, well, they don't know how to use computers, don't worry.
But they know how to use their phones. They're on that Twitter all the time, or Pinterest looking for new recipes to cook. So, you know, what are you going to do?
This is true. This is true. excuse me. All right, well, that ends the show. I'm actually trying to log into Blog Talk again so I can actually end the show. But between you and I, it's over with, so there's not much more to talk about. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for joining me, Andrew, and infinitely more interesting than anything Harry would have had to say by himself. So thank you for that.
Oh, you had to bury him when he's not here? Come on.
I'd bury him when he is here. So
that's fair. That's fair. You're an equal opportunity barrier? Burialist? Whatever, I don't know.
Yeah,
I'll figure out a word eventually.
Yeah. All right, so for Andrew and Tony, this is the end of the Raw Reaction. Thank you guys for joining us. Deuces, bitches.
to where